What does it mean to be rich? Is it having more stories to share or time to give? Is it being able to keep your loved ones close or travel somewhere far away? At Edward Jones, we believe the key to being rich is knowing what counts. Your dedicated financial advisor will take a comprehensive approach to your financial strategy to help support what truly matters to you. EdwardJones.com/findyourrich. Edward Jones, member SIPC.
I'm Frank Holland, and you're listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. Our show is live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern. Listen in. It is 5 a.m. at CNBC Global Headquarters, 10 a.m. here in London. I'm Frank Holland, and here is your 5 at 5. Bracing for inflation, investors getting set for tomorrow's March CPI report with stock futures. They're just fighting for some direction at the open. This as the chorus grows for what's being called a no-landing scenario for Jay Powell and the Fed. Why Morgan Stanley and our Jim Cramer say when it comes to rate cuts, don't hold your breath. Key to the price pressure story is commodities, with some pushing deeper into record high territory. Plus, why U.S. regulators are asking for more oversight over the red hot crypto landscape. Then later, new signals Warren Buffett's Berkshire Hathaway. They may be doubling down on their big bet in Japan. It is Tuesday, April the 9th, 2024. You are watching Worldwide Exchange right here on CNBC. Good morning. Welcome to Worldwide Exchange, coming to you from CNBC London. Thank you so much for being here with us. As always, we want to get you ready for the trading day ahead. We kick off the hour with the check of U.S. stock futures. After a bit of a mixed session for stocks on Monday, they saw the Nasdaq and the Russell post back-to-back winning sessions. Taking a look at futures right now, as you can see, kind of a mixed picture. The S&P essentially flat. Looks like the Dow would open about 25 points lower. The Nasdaq just fighting for some gains. This is investors await tomorrow's March inflation report after February's hotter than expected read. Right now, we're also checking treasuries ahead of that report, with yields at their highest level of the year and looking nothing like a market that's bracing for interest rate cuts anytime soon. The benchmark right now at 4.39. All right, let's shift gears a bit. A major factor fueling sticky inflation is the surging price of raw materials. Taking a look at an index for global commodity prices, the S&P GSCI, that's up nearly 12% this year, far outpacing the S&P's 9% climb. For reasons why, look no further than gold, oil, and copper. Gold is sitting at an all-time high. It's up 13% this year. Copper is hitting its highest level since 2018. It's up double digits this year as well. Oil surging, up more than 17% this year. Our Arabile Gumede, he joins me now right here in London with a closer look. Arabile, what are you seeing?
Yeah, so this, I mean, the numbers are astronomical, right? A more than double-digit gain across all three of those indices that we've been noting. But really, it's no point at sniffing at the likes of silver, aluminium, even zinc and tin. All of those are at multi-month highs, in fact, as well. Silver even hitting its highest level since the middle of 2021. Significantly, though, you've just seen the prices, and these are some of the price targets. Bank of America really saying that $2,400 an ounce is what they had previously proposed as a key level then for gold. We're currently sitting at around 2,357. It certainly could head towards there. And they say that it doesn't matter if the Fed didn't cut in the first quarter of this year, even if they cut later, that is still the presumed mark that they anticipate prices to be going. So that could certainly still be in play. Prices headed a little bit higher. Very quickly, here's your oil predictions then. And this is what some of the lenders are actually saying. Goldman Sachs, as well as JP Morgan, are hovering in and around that $100 of a barrel mark then, while the likes of Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, and UBS also pointing towards $90, $95 a barrel there. Let's remember that there are escalating tensions out of the Middle East, those oil production cuts as well out of OPEC. And you've got that easing concern then of too much production out of the U.S. We had been looking at copper. That was up 5% just last week alone, Frank.
So, everybody, I know you've been looking at price targets across the commodity complex, not only oil, but gold, copper. What are some of the geopolitical issues that they're citing that are leading to this rise? And where do they see those geopolitical issues, whether it's China, housing in the U.S., pushing these commodities?
Yeah, I mean, you pointed quite correctly there. One other element to really note in all of this is actually manufacturing beginning to pick up in the rest of the world then. What you're seeing is U.S. manufacturing grew for the first time in 18 months. That's data just out of last week. Then you had Chinese manufacturing activity also expanding for the first time in 6 months. German industrial production managing to move higher in the month of February, according to data that came out just yesterday. And those are three major markets then in Europe, Asia, as well as in the US. So if those are moving a little bit higher and seeing a bottoming out, clearly then we're in a growth economy of some sort, whether it's small or not, which means demand for commodities is bound to move higher. You, of course, have tensions out of the Middle East with the Israel and Hamas situation impacting shipping routes around the Red Sea. Plus, of course, then the Russia-Ukraine situation, which has seen bombing out of Russia then affect oil capacity across the world. So overall, we're looking like a demand situation, which could push prices a whole lot higher, Frank.
You know, you're talking a lot about manufacturing. You and I are working on one of the European shows as well. I believe you said cocoa is more expensive than copper, right?
It actually is at this stage. Yeah. Can you believe it? I mean, it's a surprising feat, but the price of cocoa having gone up also double digits this year alone.
Yeah, a lot of manufacturing, a lot of sweet tooths. Erbil Egumene, great to see you. Thank you very much. All right, surging prices for commodities and their impact on inflation, just one item on a growing list of factors casting doubt on the outlook for Fed rate cuts this year. This morning, the odds for a June cut, they're down to 51%. That's the lowest level since October. And a new CNBC Pro article live on CNBC.com today. It highlights a new note from Morgan Stanley's Mike Wilson, noted market voice, who says stocks are pricing in a no landing scenario. That means the economy will just keep chugging along even without any rate cuts this year. Let's bring in Jeremy Schwartz, Global Chief Investment Officer at WisdomTree. Jeremy, good morning from London. Let's just jump right into it. What do you think about this take from Mike Wilson, the idea that there could be no cuts this year? And in your mind, does that mean that the economy can keep moving forward in a positive direction?
Yeah, at the end of last year, we had said we were bullish on the markets and said it's not reliant on these 6 to 7 cuts that the market got excited the Fed was going to pivot. We said, hey, if the Fed's not cutting, it's because the economy is doing quite well. And we just talked about commodity prices. There's certainly geopolitical tension, but I agree that a lot of the growth in some of the things like oil is actually a stronger economy fueling demand. And so you look at what's holding up well, what's not participated in mega cap tech, but there's parts of the equity markets that are benefiting from a stronger economy that haven't participated. That's, I think, the place to look for within equities.
All right, so you're saying it's not dependent on a rate cut, but you are keeping a close eye on CPI, especially when it comes to the equity market. So I'm looking at core CPI. Last month, the number was 3.8%. The estimate is 3.7% for this upcoming report tomorrow. How important is it for that to be in line or slightly lower when we talk about the performance of equities going forward?
Yeah, I mean, it's going to be the lowest CPI print in a number of years. And I think actually the reality, you know, we've talked with you before, Frank, about our own alternative measures of inflation using real-time data on rent that makes inflation even well below 2% when you use things like apartmentless rent instead of BLS shelter. So the trend is their friend, both for the equities and for the CPI. We think, some of the cooler CPI could be helpful for more gains in stocks. Certainly people are worried about that inflation risk coming up, but we think the trend is going in the right direction for inflation.
You know, while we're looking at inflation, we were just hitting on it, commodity prices rising. That's a big part of the inflation story. And then that also impacts certain sectors. Obviously, the materials sector seems to be getting a boost from this rise in commodity prices. Does that hurt other sectors as well? Because we've seen over the last month, materials and industrials are up double digits. But if we continue to see that rise in commodities, does that hurt the industrial sector? Does that continue to put pressure on the real estate sector?
You know, what we just talking about, what sectors fit well in portfolios. Commodities have this very useful hedge to stocks. You know, I've been talking more and more about how bonds are not hedging stocks the way they used to. Say, if there's a risk to the equity market, is a 10-year at 440 today, does that go to 5? Well, what would drive that? It's commodity prices going higher, it's materials going higher. So from a whole portfolio allocation perspective, you say, like, what can hedge your downside risk? I think the dollar is one of those risks that could hedge it. A strong dollar would hurt U.S. profits. I think rising commodity prices would be a hurt to profit. So I think, you know, that the energy sector, the material sectors are useful for that.
Yeah, you're also bullish on short-term bonds as well to try to capture some of those rising yields. Jeremy Schwartz, it's always great to see you. Thank you very much.
Thanks, great.
All right, time now for a check on some of these this morning's top corporate stories. It is always great to see Silvana Hanau. She is here with those. Silvana, good morning to you from London.
Good morning to you in London. All right, let's get you some headlines. Donald Trump's media company looking to reclaim some of its losses after falling another 12% yesterday. Shares of DJT are down nearly 30% over the past week following its strong public debut last month. The company says it has lost millions of dollars this year and is struggling to meet its financial liabilities. The Treasury Department is requesting more enforcement powers against foreign providers of crypto services. So ahead of a hearing in the Senate today, the department says bad actors that have been shut out from the international banking system, like Russia and North Korea, are using digital assets to hide their identities and threaten national security. And Tesla is settling a lawsuit over an autopilot crash that killed an Apple engineer in 2018. The EV maker has filed to seal the terms of the settlement from the public, including any compensation fees paid to the family. Tesla will now avoid a months-long trial around its self-driving technology, just months ahead of its robo-taxi launch. And this as Tesla co-founder and former CEO Martin Eberhard told investors at an HSBC summit in Hong Kong today, he is, quote, amazed that Tesla gets away with rolling out autonomous driving given its history of fatal accidents, Frank.
Yeah, looking at Tesla shares right now, down just about 0.5%. I will continue to watch Tesla. A lot of EV news in recent days. Silvana, good to see you.
Good to see you.
All right, we got a lot more to come here on Worldwide Exchange, including the one word that investors have to know today. But first, much more on the commodity-fueled inflation risk and why Morgan Stanley and Apollo, they're not the only ones now pricing in a no rate cut scenario. Hear what our Jim Cramer has to say. Plus, while yesterday's solar eclipse may have had everybody looking up in the sky, our Pippa Stevens was on the ground digging into the solar industry and the mounting headwinds facing that sector. And then later on Worldwide Exchange, with Congress back from break, the battle to approve new aid for Ukraine, that gets back on track. We're live in Rochester, New York, with one defense contractor eagerly awaiting a victory there. A very busy hour still ahead when Worldwide Exchange returns. Stay with us.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tasty Trade. Tasty Trade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tasty Trade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Taking a look at futures right now, kind of a muted start to the early trade right now. Looks like the Dow would open up just very slightly lower. The S&P just basically flat. Let's now see how Europe is shaping up as this trading day gets underway. Sylvia Amaro is right here with me in our London newsroom with much more. Sylvia.
Good morning, Frank. Well, it's been basically a lower start to the trading session here in Europe. We're seeing that the main bourses in Germany and in Italy are actually leading the losses at this stage, down by about 0.6%. And this is after we saw the main benchmark in Europe on Monday, the Stoxx 600, ending the session positive by about 0.4%. What we're looking at this stage is basically this holding pattern among investors as the way to hear from the ECB on Thursday, and of course, naturally, that key inflation print out of the United States as well. But I want to show you the sectorial breakdown as well, because there are some interesting moves in that space too. So at the top, we are seeing basic resources outperforming at this stage, up by about 1.5%. Oil and gas stocks, though, also up by about 0.8%, and a lot happening in this space. We are seeing Shell shares moving higher off the back of higher oil prices, but we also heard from BP this morning their positive trading update has actually boosted the sector overall as well. On the other hand, at the bottom, we have construction and material down by about 0.7%, and retail as well down by about 0.6%, Frank.
All right, Sylvia, thank you very much. All right, turn our attention now back to the U.S. One of the big stories there, the solar eclipse that swept across the country yesterday. Everybody's eyes up in the sky. But while everybody was busy looking through those special glasses, our Pippa Stevens, she was on the ground digging into why the solar industry is facing some potential hurdles this year. Pippa, good morning. Over to you.
Good morning, Frank. Well, residential solar is coming off a record year, but adoption across the U.S. remains low, roughly 5%, in part because of costs. They've come down a lot over the last decade, but prices in the U.S. are much higher than in more developed solar markets like Europe and Australia. In the U.S., the system will cost you roughly $3.30 per watt, or $26,400 for an 8-kilowatt system, according to SEIA, before factoring in the investment tax credit. That compares to less than $1 per watt in Australia. U.S. solar is more expensive for three main reasons: financing, labor, and soft costs. Between 85 and 90% of U.S. systems are financed, according to Wood Mackenzie. Now, that can mean no upfront costs, but higher rates will impact the payback period. In Europe, more systems are bought with cash, and labor is also cheaper. But the biggest hurdle is soft costs, which includes permitting and interconnection, as well as customer acquisition. Solar just still is not well understood across the country, meaning companies outsource sales, think door-to-door knocking, which come with high commissions. All told, these soft costs can total as much as a third of the total cost of the system. Frank.
So, Pippa, just kind of going back to what you were talking about, those so-called soft costs, solar stocks, they've really been laggards. What are companies doing right now to try to cut those soft costs? And what's the stock outlook from here?
So one thing is that our permitting and interconnection, the grid, is really a mess. And not only do regulations differ from state to state, they can differ from town to town. And so in order to streamline that process that right now takes many months, a lot of companies are looking at how can we make that faster, because time is money. And also, if it takes longer, if it's more cumbersome, customers can ultimately then decide to cancel. But the other thing that's really impacting the sector right now, especially the stocks, is just higher rates, because when rates go up, it does mean that if you're leasing that system, if you're loaning that system, then it is going to cost you more for that payback period. And so ultimately, these companies say that they still remain attractive, given that the final costs are still lower than what you're going to pay for your utility every month. But until those rates come down, until consumers feel like they're in a better spending position, we might not see a bottom for the sector just yet. And so that, Frank, is the key thing to watch ahead of earnings. Have we seen a bottom in the U.S. residential solar sector?
All right, our Pippa Stevens back at CNBC HQ. Pippa, always good to see you. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, watching the action in China EV stocks just one day after Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen said right here on Worldwide Exchange that the U.S. is, quote, open to EV imports from China. We'll be back right after this.
Have you ever brought your magic to Walt Disney World like, hey, we came to play? Did you tip your tiara to a Creole princess or get goofy officially? When we come through, it's true magic, because we came to play at Walt Disney World Resort.
Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. Congress returns from their spring recess today with several critical items on the agenda. That includes whether to approve additional aid for Ukraine. While opposition has been growing, more than half of previous funds have gone to U.S. companies making weapons and technology to send to Ukraine. Our Emily Wilkins is in Rochester, New York, where one defense contractor is awaiting the outcome in Washington. Emily, good morning.
Good morning, Frank. Well, yeah, we are here in Rochester, New York at an L3 Harris facility that produces tactical communication radios, which are critical for our armies to coordinate over long distances. And they're waiting to see if Congress is going to pass that $60 billion in funding for Ukraine that President Biden asked for, because if Congress does, part of that funding is likely to come here. Now, this facility has already gotten several hundred million dollars since Congress began passing supplemental funding for Ukraine in 2022. But they're not alone. The majority of aid to help Ukraine, more than $96 billion, has been spent in the U.S., according to the American Enterprise Institute. Elaine McCluster, a senior fellow at AEI who was part of the team that did the analysis, said the funding allocated to Ukraine has had a substantial impact on the U.S. defense industry. 117 production lines in 31 states are producing weapons that are being sent to Ukraine or refueling American supplies.
The money is really revitalizing decayed production lines. It's bringing back institutional knowledge about weapons manufacturing to the fore, and it's pushing America And its defense sector to innovate and modernize old weapon systems and to use things in new ways.
This L3Harris manufacturing facility is not only waiting to see if Congress is going to be moving for more funding, but so are about 470 mid to small companies that help supply parts for these communication radios. Now, House Speaker Mike Johnson is working to find a proposal that would provide additional aid for the war in Ukraine while getting the support of a majority of House Republicans. He's considered several options, like making part of the aid alone or using Russian assets seized by the U.S. to fund the aid. We expect to learn more this week. House members have been back in their districts for the past 2 weeks, but they do return to D.C. tonight. And you can bet that Ukraine funding is going to be a top priority. Frank?
Okay, expect to be a priority, but there are certainly a lot of political considerations in this issue. For instance, Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, she's outspoken and said no more aid for Ukraine. She's also filed a motion to oust Speaker Johnson right before lawmakers left town. Could Johnson face an attempt to get him out as speaker if he brings that Ukraine funding up for a vote?
Frank, it is a possibility that he could face a vote like that. And of course, it's a huge question this time as to what the outcome of that vote would be. There have been a couple Republicans who seem to be with Congresswoman Green as far as voting to oust Johnson. But at this point, we don't exactly know the number. Another big question is how many Democrats could step in to potentially support Johnson. There have been a few Democrats who have said, look, if Johnson's able to move on Ukraine aid and able to get that done, we can help support him to make sure that he stays in his speakership. But of course, lots of politics there, lots of considerations. But the signals that we've seen from Speaker Johnson at this point show that even with this motion to vacate hanging over his head, he is still planning to move forward on finding a way to get this aid done.
You know, as they say, politics make strange bedfellows. Our Emily Wilkins in Rochester, New York. Great story as always. Good to see you, Emily. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, the crypto asset hot on Bitcoin's tail, riding a new wave of optimistic speculation. We're live from Paris, Blockchain Week, with much more on that story. But if you haven't already, make sure you follow our podcast. If you miss Worldwide Exchange on TV, check us out on Apple, Spotify, or other podcast apps. And we will be right back after this break. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. I am Frank Holland coming to you from CNBC London. Let's get you ready for the trading day ahead. As always, we pick up the half an hour with a check of U.S. stock futures. And take a look at this. Futures were kind of mixed, slightly lower earlier today. Looks like we're on pace for a Tuesday turnaround. Right now, you see the S&P's firmly in positive territory. The NASDAQ moving even higher right now. We'll continue to watch the futures throughout the show. This is investors await tomorrow's March inflation report after February's hotter than expected read. We're checking treasuries ahead of that report with yields at their highest level of the year and looking nothing like a market that's bracing for interest rate cuts, at least not anytime soon. The benchmark right now at 4.38, just a basis point lower than it was earlier. We also want to get a look at Chinese EV makers trading in Hong Kong. We're talking names like BYD, Li Auto, XPeng and NIO, all getting a boost there. This on the back of comments from Treasury Secretary Janet Yellen during an exclusive sit down with our Sarah Eisen on Worldwide Exchange yesterday, talking about the potential for those cars being on American roads.
They are allowed to sell their EVs in the United States. We don't have rules against it. In that area as well, we're trying to foster a domestic industry. We're certainly open to imports, including those from China. There are no rule against China selling EVs in the United States.
And again, those Chinese EV makers trading higher in Hong Kong. Let's now get to some of this morning's top corporate stories. Our Silvana Hanau is here with those. Silvana, good morning again.
Hey, Frank, good morning again to you. The Biden administration is reportedly set to hand out its latest round of funds from the CHIPS Act. According to Reuters, the White House will announce $6 billion going to South Korea's Samsung next week. Reuters adds the money will go towards construction of four facilities in the U.S. and that Samsung will more than double its investment in this country to over $44 billion as part of the deal. General Motors' Cruise unit is reportedly preparing to resume testing of its robo-taxis. According to Bloomberg, the self-driving car division will do so with safety drivers in Phoenix. And the report adds that Cruise has not set a timeline to begin testing after it suspended U.S. operations in October due to an incident involving a pedestrian. And Elon Musk says artificial intelligence that's smarter than the most brilliant human could come sooner than we think. In an interview on his X platform, Musk says that development could happen as early as next year. He added that AI has been held back by the availability of electricity and that the next version of Grok, that's the AI chatbot from his XAI startup, should be trained by next month, Frank.
Very interesting stuff there. So, Mana, thank you very much.
You got it.
All right, turning back to the equity market, shares of Apple, they're lower again this morning after falling more than 0.5% to kick off the new trading week. That drop coming on the heels of a new survey from KeyBank warning of, quote unquote, weak demand for the iPhone. The bank, which rates Apple as sector weight, says yearly sales for the iPhone, they fell significantly due to pent-up demand for the iPhone 14. KeyBank is also lowering its iPhone estimates by 2% and hardware and total revenue expectations by 1%. Apple is now down more than 12% this year compared to fellow tech giants like Meta, Netflix, and Amazon, who are all hitting fresh 52-week highs. Joining me now, right here in London, is Sarah Kunst, Clio Capital Managing Director. Sarah, it is so great to have you right here on set with me. Good morning.
Yes, thank you. Good morning.
All right, so Apple shares down on that KeyBank note. I'm going to dig a little bit deeper into that note because there was a lot of nuance in it. So first and foremost, Apple's iPhone sales, they're up 9% month over month, but they're down 15% year over year. Is this meaningful? Is the fact that we're seeing month-over-month growth meaningful, or is the fact that we're seeing 15% declines year-over-year meaningful? Which one's more important?
You know, I think that I don't love just sort of looking at the device sales like that is the only metric, because the reality is that you don't need a new iPhone every year. They're not necessarily coming out with these huge new features. They work well, right? Even if you bought a phone 3 years ago, it probably still works well. And we know that in markets like China, they're not seeing that same sort of embrace from the government that they used to have a little bit. And so I'm not shocked by the fact that it's down a little bit month over month. And I don't think that that's a huge warning sign.
All right. Can I take you back a little bit of a throwback to FANG? We talk about Magnificent Seven all the time now. So three FANG stocks hitting, 52-week highs. We just hit on them. But there's one that you don't like, Netflix. I'm not saying you don't like it, but you're not as bullish on it as everybody else. You don't have that same confidence in their business. Why is that?
Here's the thing. I actually think they're doing a great job with their business in that, they're profitable, right? They are a streamer making money. That is not something we are used to seeing. The problem is that most streamers don't actually have to be in the business of streaming. The app, the Disney Pluses of the world can lose a ton of money. The Apple TV Pluses can lose a ton of money because they're not the only one. And so the thing that scares me a little bit about Netflix is that's their only business. And right now they don't have as many hit shows as we've gotten used to seeing.
So you're saying content is still king in your mind. It's not about ads and all these other things that have kind of come into the streaming space or even, competition on price.
Advertising is so hard for media companies, right? And so the reality is that Netflix trying to become an ad company, what they're doing with the crackdown on sharing has definitely helped in the short term with gains. But there is a question long term of if they don't have hit shows, if it's harder to access it, do people just sort of forget about it and move on to one of their other five streaming subscriptions?
All right, we're looking at the chart right now. Netflix up 29% year to date. We just hit on the declines on Apple. So give me a sense, you as through your investor eye, right now, is this an opportunity to buy Apple? Is this an opportunity to take profits on Netflix based on your thesis?
I would probably take profits on Netflix. They have done a great job of coming back from some of those post-COVID lulls where everybody left their houses. And so it's a great time to lock in those gains if you have them. For Apple, I like Apple. I think it is decently well priced. I don't think it's this big, exciting, sexy company. And I like that about it. It's going to continue to make good hardware.
All right, Sarah, sit tight just for a second. We're going to switch gears just a bit. We want to get your take on what's coming up. Coming up right now, we're going to be switching gears just a bit. Give me 1 second just to get that going. Coming up, Bitcoin and Ether pulling back after seeing some sizable gains yesterday. We go to Europe's largest crypto event for what industry leaders are saying about recent renewed excitement around the space. But first, we have some of your top trending stories. South Carolina is not the only winner in women's basketball. The NCAA championship game between Iowa and South Carolina setting a record with 18.7 million viewers. That is the most watched women's college basketball game since 1992. And I'm from Philly, Dawn Staley from Philly. Congratulations to her. I think she's kind of become the greatest women's basketball coach of all time. Props to her, shout out to Philly. Okay, another year, another dog-dominated victory. The UConn Huskies winning the NCAA's men's title against number one seed Purdue, marking their second straight national championship. UConn joins Florida and Duke as the third team with a repeat win since UCLA's reign with Kareem Abdul-Jabbar all the way back in the 60s and 70s. Those teams amazing. And they may not be winning in basketball, but they're still on top when it comes to price. The cost to attend an Ivy League school next year, wow, surpassing $90,000. The most expensive schools in the league include University of Pennsylvania, my hometown of Philly, Cornell, Brown, and Dartmouth. Stay with us. Much more Worldwide Exchange coming up. All right, welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It is time now for your morning call sheet. We start with Goldman Sachs cutting its price target on Tesla from 190 down to 175 per share. It cites weaker first quarter deliveries and feels this new price target better reflects market conditions. As you can see, shares of Tesla down almost 0.5%. Barclays also downgrading its rating on American Express to equal weight. It cites factors including decelerating loan growth and some softness around consumer spending. Shares of Amex pretty much flat right now in the pre-market. And Deutsche Bank reinstating coverage of Cisco with a buy rating and a $51 price target. It says the recently completed acquisition of Splunk could improve sentiment and Cisco's upcoming investor day, it might be a positive catalyst. Shares of Cisco up over 0.5% in the pre-market. Time now for your global briefing. HSBC is selling its business in Argentina as it moves to sharpen its focus on Asia. The company will take a $1 billion pre-tax loss in its fiscal first quarter. HSBC is selling the assets, which include banking, asset management, and insurance, to Argentina's fifth largest bank. Blackstone is reportedly close to a deal to take French skincare company La Sartène private. Bloomberg reports the structure of the transaction is unclear right now, but Blackstone may join La Sartène's controlling shareholder in taking it private. Shares of the company were halted in Hong Kong today ahead of a potential announcement. They hit a two-year high in February when those deal talks were first reported. And Berkshire Hathaway is planning to sell yen-denominated bonds, fueling speculation. Warren Buffett is considering more investments in Japan. Bloomberg reports Berkshire will be the first major overseas debt issuer to sell yen bonds since the Bank of Japan scrapped negative rates last month. Shares of several Japanese trading houses, including Mitsubishi, Sumitomo, rising between 2 and 3% today. All right, we want to turn our attention now over to the cryptocurrency sector with Bitcoin. Very briefly crossing above 72,000 yesterday for the first time since the middle of last month. Let's take a look at the move in Bitcoin right now. We just saw it down about 1.5%, trading at about 70,600. Meanwhile, Bitcoin's biggest rival, Ether, stealing just a bit of the spotlight, soaring as much as 8% on Monday, fueled in part by expectations around the approval of a spot Ether ETF. Sarah Kuntz of Cleo Capital still with us to talk a bit about this. A lot going on in the cryptocurrency space. We have the halving with Bitcoin coming up in a few weeks, and also Ether, the idea of not only ETFs, but just the fact that a lot of people see it as a more viable and useful cryptocurrency because you can build apps on it. What's your take on some of these moves that we're seeing?
I think that when crypto's back, it tends to come back across coins. You don't usually just see only Bitcoin, and that's certainly what we're seeing. We've even seen some of those, you know, coins that are a little bit, there's not much utility for them, you know, have a huge ramp up over the last kind of couple months. And so I'm not surprised to see this excitement around ETH. I think that the crypto diehards think that ETH is sort of a more perfect Bitcoin. It's just that the price never quite catches up. But I do think that we're going to continue to see some positive moves in it.
All right, ETH makes it sound so cute. Right now, again, down 1.5%. I think some investors might not think that's as cute. I do want to talk to you about something that we've been debating here in Europe. Again, I was on some of the European shows earlier today. How important are rate cuts to the story of cryptocurrency, specifically Bitcoin? Is there any type of relation between the idea of central banks cutting rates and the rise in Bitcoin?
Bitcoin was supposed to be a non-correlated asset, and someday that might be true, but not anytime soon. I think that when rates go down, there's fewer places to get easy money. There's fewer places to get that safe money from sort of a sweep account or a money market. And so crypto looks like a kind of interesting, safe, relatively easy place to go. So it usually, as we get closer to rate cuts, we do find that people like Bitcoin more. But also, as we get closer to rate cuts, it means, you know, the economy is doing some things that tends to mean that there's more sort of retail investor money going into Bitcoin as well.
So you mentioned retail investor money. Let's also talk about investor money. Not only when it comes to Bitcoin, but also Ether. Again, the idea of an ETF for Ether coming up. Also the halving. How do you see the landscape for cryptocurrency in this first month of the second quarter going forward? Obviously, we have central bank decisions. There's just a lot of action going on in the general markets. What's your forecast for the rest of the month? Will it continue to be an upward trajectory but a bit volatile, or do you see a significant shift in momentum?
One thing you always have to remember about these bigger cryptocurrencies is there are people who bought in at truly kind of zero per coin, and some of them are still holding. And so when you see these highs, you often see a little bit of a dip right after, because the ability to lock in a gain at 7,000 or 70,000 a Bitcoin when you mined it for a dollar 10 years ago is really, really, really tempting. And so I tend to see that when we do hit a new price floor, we often almost immediately see a dip. And I don't think that that's indicative of much more than people smartly looking at what they stand to make and locking in some gains. So I think it's going to continue to sort of go up and go down a little bit. But the overall trend line is clearly up and to the right.
All right. You know what? I want to put you on the spot a little bit, if you don't mind. If we can put up a year-to-date Bitcoin chart, because we've been talking about Bitcoin for so many weeks, whether it's the ETFs and everything else. I mean, we're seeing over 2 years it's up 65%, but a considerably sharper move just this year, up 66% year-to-date. The halving's coming up again. I believe it's on April 21st. Those are the reports. If you're somebody who's been on the sidelines about Bitcoin, you don't know about it, is this your potential to try to get in and make some money? Do you see the halving having a significant impact on an upside move that, as a lot of people are speculating, it will?
It probably will show some price bumps. That being said, the best time to get into Bitcoin is not when it's in the news and not when it's hitting all-time highs.
That's a pretty clear answer right there. I like that one. Sarah Kunz from Clio Capital, thank you so much for joining us, breaking down not only tech, but cryptocurrency. We appreciate your time and your insight, and thanks for being here in London. All right, time now, let's turn over to our Arjun Kripal. He's live at Paris Blockchain Week, Europe's biggest blockchain and digital assets event, talking to some of the industry's key players. Arjun, over to you.
Good morning, Frank. Well, look, a few things coming out. Firstly, on the Ether ETF application approval, I spoke to the CEOs of both VanEck, one of the Bitcoin issuers, and CoinShares, another Bitcoin issuer. Both told me that they don't believe the SEC is going to approve an Ether ETF at any point in time. My second point of business is I've just sat down, coming off the back of an interview with the CEO of Binance. Now, this is right off the back of course, last year, Changpeng Zhao, the former CEO, pleading guilty to criminal charges with the Department of Justice as part of a $4.3 billion settlement with the DOJ in the U.S., and part of what the DOJ alleged was a culture issue at Binance. And that's what I sat down and talked to a little bit with Richard Teng, the new CEO of Binance, who addressed some of those issues. He comes from a regulatory background, and he's looking to clean up the company. One of the things he said is a lot of what the DOJ alleged was past issues with Binance when they were a younger company, less mature. And his focus now is moving towards greater maturity and sustainability. The direction of travel, he said, is towards much more compliance. And he is focused on building what he called a very robust compliance program. He stressed the work the company is doing with regulators. And really the message he's trying to say is this is a company that's trying to mature, trying to clean up its act here as it moves forward. As part, of course, as the markets continue to be very buoyant. Just on the markets, as he was discussing there, Frank, he was very bullish, saying that actually what's interesting is the ETF combined with, of course, that upcoming halving will support markets for the rest of the year. And even his prediction for Bitcoin at this point was a bit behind where the market is right now. So still a lot of bullishness around crypto markets more broadly, Frank.
All right, Arjun Kripal, live at Paris Blockchain Week. Arjun, great to see you as always. All right, coming up here on Worldwide Exchange, we have the one word that every investor needs to know today. Plus, don't sweat the Fed. That's the advice our Jim Cramer is giving investors around the shrinking hopes around rate cuts this year. Also, this Thursday, CNBC lands in Colorado to explore how Denver and Boulder have leveraged the Rocky Mountain lifestyle to create two powerhouse economies. But that explosive expansion coming with some growing pains. Cities of Success, Denver and Boulder. Premieres Thursday at 10 p.m. Eastern, only on CNBC, and we are back in just a moment. Welcome back to Worldwide Exchange. It is time now for your WEX wrap-up. Shares of Trump Media extending yesterday's losses, where it dropped more than 12%. The decline brings the value of the former president's stake in the company now less than $3 billion. The Treasury Department is requesting more enforcement powers against foreign crypto providers. They say the sanctions are meant to protect national security from bad actors like North Korea and Russia. Tesla settling a lawsuit over its fatal autopilot crash of an Apple engineer. It comes just months ahead of the EV maker's planned launch of its robo-taxi. And the odds for a June Fed rate cut, they're down to 51%. That's the lowest since October. Morgan Stanley's Mike Wilson says stocks are pricing in a no-landing scenario, meaning the economy will keep chugging along even with no rate cuts this year. Here's what to watch today. In just a few minutes, we get the latest look at the health of small business with the NFIB survey in Washington. The House returns from recess today with Ukraine funding top of the agenda for lawmakers. And in tech, Google kicks off its Cloud Next Developer Conference today. Investors, they're hoping for a spark of momentum today as we await that big CPI report. Taking a look at futures, they are now firmly in the green. Looks like the Dow would open up, well, a little bit higher, but the Nasdaq continues to move higher throughout the morning. While the markets continue to focus on prospects around Fed rate cuts this year, our Jim Cramer is telling investors, just be thankful that Powell isn't hiking anymore.
We have a robust economy, so I'm a lot less worried about this upcoming earnings season. When I check the record historically, this kind of job creation without a ton of inflation is about as good as it gets, regardless of where short-term interest rates are sitting. Bottom line, if you're hoping for Fed rate cuts from the Fed, I say maybe don't hold your breath. This economy doesn't need it. Just be glad we aren't getting any more rate hikes.
And for more on this in the trading day ahead, let's bring in Jeffrey Kleintop, Charles Schwab, Chief Global Investment Strategist. Jeff, good morning. Good to see you from London. I'm just going to jump right into it. What do you think of Jim Cramer's take when it comes to the Fed? How do you see rate cuts in the economy and also the stock market being tied together?
You know, I think there are certainly stocks in the market that are looking forward to the release of liquidity that could come from Fed rate cuts. But Frank, I remain focused on the one place in the world where they're hiking rates. That's Japan. I'm still a big fan of Japan's stock market, not just because they're hiking rates, but because of the improved economic momentum coming from the manufacturing recovery and a lot of things in place there in Japan sustaining that, plus more attractive valuations than what we see here in the U.S.
Yeah, Jeff, you've been talking about Japan for quite a while. I think you're one of the first guests to really highlight the opportunities in Japan here on Worldwide Exchange. I want to get to your WEX word of the day. You're actually kind of fitting in with one of our themes today, commodities.
Oil is my WEX word of the day. At noon, we get the monthly oil report from the U.S. Energy Information Agency, and the energy sector has led the stock market over the past month. Oil demand estimates may be revised higher in today's report, given the strengthening global economic data, and that could push oil to new highs on the year, along with the geopolitical concerns we're all well aware of, war returning to the Middle East, oil tankers under attack, Ukraine targeting Russian energy infrastructure, and so on. Even a temporary move higher could further boost the energy sector. But at the same time, a major and sustained upward move in oil prices could negatively impact the inflation outlook and worsen the outlook for rate cuts.
You know, Jeff, you just took the words out of my mouth right there. Oil's continue to rise. Look at WTI up double digits year to date. How do you see oil impacting not only CPI, the report they're waiting for tomorrow, but going forward as we get closer and closer to June? Is oil, in your mind, one of the factors that the Fed is going to see as obviously it's inflationary, but see as possibly something that they can overlook as they've overlooked a stronger than expected job market and some other stronger than expected economic reports? Or would that influence their rate cut decision?
I think it's getting harder to overlook a lot of the factors in inflation that are remaining very stubborn. And oil is one of those. It goes into everything. We know housing's been an issue for a long time, but now you've got other commodities, and not just oil, but metals and many other inputs. Now, as the manufacturing sector ramps up, that could become more important for the Fed. So I wouldn't say they're just going to dismiss it and look at CPI X energy. I think it's going to become an important factor.
All right, let's get back to the markets for a minute. Obviously, earnings season's about to kick off. Also, yesterday was the eclipse. Jeff, you're really on topic today. So you're looking at what you're calling an earnings eclipse. We're going to show the audience this chart. Just explain to us, why is this important for investors and how should this influence, if other people kind of follow along with your thesis, how should this influence other people's investment strategy?
So in the first quarter of this year, it's expected by analysts that the It will be the last quarter that the Magnificent Seven earnings growth there in yellow is positive, while it's negative for the rest of the stock market. In fact, that by the fourth quarter of this year, relative earnings growth is expected to flip, with the rest of the world expected to eclipse the growth in the Mag 7. And this may further shift away from the Mag 7 to other sectors where earnings are recovering, like financials, energy, and materials, some of which have really shown signs of life here lately.
Jeff, we got to leave it there. Thank you very much. Jeff Kleintock from Charles Schwab. Great to see you. That's going to do it for us here on Worldwide Exchange. You've been listening to CNBC's Worldwide Exchange. You can always catch us live weekdays at 5 a.m. Eastern.
Go spread the word. When you get a fresh, hot McCrispy from McDonald's and you can feel the heat coming through the bag, don't try to wait till you get home. Always respect hot chicken. The McCrispy, only at McDonald's. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.